Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatate Shatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasri Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 71, Verse 1. Sri Sukha Uvacha. It Udiritam Akarnya. Devashe Udavo Bravit. Sabhyanam Matam Agyaya. Krishnasecha Mahamatihi.
Shri Sukha Uvacha. Śrīyuta Uvāca
Shri Sukha Uvacha. Sukadev Goswami said, Iti, alas, Udiratam, that which was stated, Akanya, hearing Deva Rishi by Narada, sage of the demigods, Uddhava, Abravit, spoke. Sabhyanam of the members of the royal assembly, matam opinion, agyaya understanding, krishnasya of Lord Krishna, cha and mahamati great minded. Translation: Sukadev Goswami said, having thus heard the statements of Devarshi Narada and understanding the opinions of both the assembly and Lord Krishna, the great-minded Uddhava began to speak. Text 2, Sri Uddhava said, O Lord, as the sage advised, you should help your cousin fulfill his plan for performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, and you should also protect the kings who are begging for your shelter. Purport: Devarshi Narada wanted Lord Krishna to go to Indraprastha and help his cousin Yudhisthira perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. At the same time, the members of the royal assembly strongly desired that he defeat Jarasandha and rescue the kings he was holding prisoner. The great-minded Uddhava could understand that Lord Krishna desired to do both things, and thus he intelligently advised how both these purposes could be simultaneously accomplished. Text 3. Only one who has conquered all opponents in every direction can perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, O Almighty One. Thus, in my opinion, conquering Jarasandha will serve both purposes. Purport: Sri Uddhava here explains that only one who has conquered all directions is entitled to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. Therefore, Lord Krishna should immediately accept the invitation to participate in the sacrifice, but then he should arrange to kill Jarasandha as a necessary prerequisite. In this way, the king's request for protection would be fulfilled automatically. If the Lord would thus adhere to a single policy, namely seeing that Rajasuya sacrifices are performed properly, all purposes would be fulfilled. According to Srila Rupa Goswami and his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, one of Lord Krishna's qualities is chatura, clever, which means that he can perform various types of work at the same time. Thus, the Lord could certainly have solved the dilemma of how to simultaneously satisfy King Yudhisthira's desire to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice and the imprisoned king's desire for freedom. But Krishna wanted to give his dear devotee Uddhava the credit for the solution, and thus he pretended to be perplexed. So as I explained the other day, Krishna is all-knowledgeable, omniscient, yet sometimes he doesn't appear to be. In this case, he asks Uddhava for advice. And then, of course, Krishna knows, in one sense, everything. But still, he wants to glorify Uddhava and show how Uddhava is clever. Also, to show that Uddhava actually has a mind very similar to Krishna. So he can understand Krishna's mood, his mentality, his thinking, what he desires, etc. And for that reason, Uddhava is glorified very often in the Bhagavatam as being the very close associate of Krishna. And of course, in Brihad Bhagavatamrita also, there it is pointed out that Pandavas are very dear devotees, but the Yadus are closer because Krishna lives with them. But among the Yadus, Uddhava is the closest of all.
Of course, then we say they're closer to Krishna as the people of Vrindavan and ultimately gopis and Radha. But anyway, among the people of Dwarka, Uddhava is considered to be very, very close. And as I mentioned previously, politically, yes, he can understand the situation and give good advice. But more than that, he understands Krishna's attraction for Vrindavan and his attraction to the gopis, etc. So that is even more important, that he understand that high level of Krishna's mood and his sentiments. And also his separation from the people of Vrindavan. So Uddhava is highly qualified, so it's not a problem for him to give such advice. So in this case, both choices are good. One, Jarasandha should be defeated because the kings are pleading, "You please rescue us. We've been imprisoned by him and we have to get out." So that's, and they're devotees, so the Lord should rescue them. And simultaneously, Krishna's mission, one of the missions in coming to manifesting on earth, is to destroy all the adharmic people and establish dharma. So therefore, this is a proper activity. We can say this is a negative aspect, destruction of all the bad things. And then the other one is to respond to King Yudhisthira, a devotee who's making a request, or a Narada on his behalf, "Please come to the Rajasuya sacrifice so I can glorify you." And I can do service for you by ruling on your behalf. This also is, we can say, fulfilling Krishna's promise that when he comes to the material world, he will destroy a dharma and he will nourish dharma. So going to Yudhisthira's sacrifice is nourishing the dharma. It's proclaiming that Yudhisthira is the favorite of Krishna, the Supreme Lord, and that everyone should support dharma. And of course, Yudhisthira himself is a son of dharma, so very, very appropriate that he support him. So he should support the devotees, definitely, and he should rescue the devotees from the demon. Mm-hmm. Both are good things. So it looks like a conflict, simply because whose desire we should fulfill first. And that's basically the conflict, which is better to do. Which is often there in the material world also, we have choices, you know, which is the better thing to do. And sometimes we have different devotees say we should do this, and other devotees say we do this. And they start arguing, this is better, this is better. Which is the better thing to do? And usually if we think about it, there doesn't have to be a conflict or an argument, because we can somehow figure out what the solution is in which both people are satisfied. If we don't have, you know, false ego or whatever. So here, of course, it's all devotees, so we don't expect them to have false ego. Yudhisthira doesn't have false ego, and Yadus don't have false ego also, because they're devotees of the Lord. Nevertheless, they may have strong opinions about something. Also, we can say an arrangement of Krishna's Leela Shakti or whatever. They're really enthusiastic to have Krishna do a particular thing. So, in this case, because of the strong personalities involved, one a great devotee, Yudhisthira, on the other hand, the Yadus also very close to the Lord, on the other hand. Who's a superior devotee? It's hard to say. Are the Yadus greater than Yudhisthira? Never like that. So it's a little bit of a thing. How are we going to satisfy everyone? There is a solution. And we see here that Uddhava gives a nice explanation that satisfies everyone. Yudhisthira should be satisfied. Because it is proper that he does perform a Rajasuya sacrifice and declare himself the king. Krishna's purpose is fulfilled by that, that dharma is reestablished. And of course, on the personal level, Krishna should satisfy such a devotee and act according to his wishes. And, of course, this will be blissful for Yudhisthira, because in this way he gets to glorify Krishna. So So he should satisfy his devotee in this way. So, very good. But then, in order to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, then all obstacles have to be removed. Huh? And we can't have Jarasandha with the kings imprisoned, etc., and who refuses to submit to Yudhisthira. Then he cannot perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. So therefore, we should perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, but at the same time, in order to do that, then we also have to defeat Jarasandha and free the kings. In other words, both things should be done, but then the sequence would be, first we have to eliminate Jarasandha and free the kings. Then we can have the Rajasuya sacrifice. So it's only a matter of which one comes first, not that we do one or the other. So first kill Jarasandha and then perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. If that's not done, then there's a problem in performing a Rajasuya sacrifice. Yudhisthira can proclaim himself the king, but then we have a dharma present in the form of Jarasandha imprisoning the kings unjustly. So how you can have a dharma and say at the same time, I control the earth? Not possible. So must be done. Somehow Jarasandha has to be eliminated and the kings have to be freed. So then we can say that the killing Jarasandha is a component of, or it says in the purport, a prerequisite of performing the Rajasuya sacrifice. So the two things go together, not that they're separate things, and one leads to the other. So in this way, both things must be done, but the Rajasuya sacrifice comes after the killing of Jarasandha. So in this way, the problem gets solved. Uddhava very nicely analyzes the situation so that everyone is satisfied. The Yadus are satisfied because Jarasandha is eliminated, and he's also a threat to the Yadus. And Yudhisthira is satisfied, Narada Muni is satisfied, because the sacrifice also gets performed and Krishna is present there, supporting it. So, in other words, what looks like a problem ultimately is not a problem, simply because there's two different opinions. It looks like we have to do one or the other, but here the solution is, no, do both. Not one or the other, do both. But a precedence goes to the killing of Jarasandha first, then the Rajasuya sacrifice. So it's simply a matter of order. So it takes a little intelligence to analyze things properly, especially if there are conflicting opinions and the people are very strong in their opinions. So here Uddhava very calmly analyzes the situation and he's very astute or clever at doing it. He can understand the aim of Krishna, the general aim of Krishna, with his, destroying a dharma and establishing dharma, etc. And then the detail is that in order to establish dharma, we have to eliminate the adharma. Necessary. So you may have to kill all the miscreant kings first, and then you can say, I have established dharma. So that is what takes place here. In other cases, of course, one can simultaneously establish dharma and destroy a dharma. And we see that also taking place in the whole history of the Mahabharata. It's not that suddenly all a dharma gets destroyed and dharma is established. Even when a dharma is still present in the form of Duryodhana and everyone, still the Pandavas are there and the preaching is going on and they're still devotees and Krishna is supporting them. Even though they don't control everything, still there's some dharma there also. In this case, of course, particular situation is the Rajasuya sacrifice is a proclamation of Yudhisthira being the ruler of the world. So therefore, necessarily, all these opposing elements should be eliminated. And especially the obvious ones. The small ones, okay, we can deal with later, but Jarasandha was a big big opponent, constantly causing problems. So therefore, he should be eliminated. So this is a very intelligent analysis of the situation and a solution from the point of view of, politics and military advice, and also in terms of devotion and the fulfillment of Krishna's purposes. Ultimately, of course, we know that Krishna's goal is, of course, destroy a dharma, establish dharma. But then the ultimate purpose is to give joy to the devotees and to associate with the devotees and perform pastimes with the devotees. That's the Lord's real purpose. So therefore, his real purpose is to play in Vrindavan. Play with the gopis. whatever. And secondarily, okay, kill the demons also, if they interfere. So his main purpose is actually to give pleasure to his devotees. That's the Ananda aspect of the Supreme Lord. So though the killing of Jarasandha is necessary, that's also secondary type of thing. Main element is to interact with his devotees. So there's two types of interaction here. One is with Yudhisthira and the Pandavas, which he should do, and the other is with the Yadus, and he also has to respond to them very nicely and satisfy them. So in this particular solution, both parties get satisfied. We can say, of course, Yudhisthira, maybe a little delay, because he has to wait until Jarasandha is eliminated. Nevertheless, he is satisfied because Krishna personally appears in a sacrifice, and a very, very it's a prestigious event where the Lord himself personally comes and serves everyone there. So Yudhisthira becomes completely satisfied with this, and then Krishna becomes satisfied with Yudhisthira's satisfaction. At the same time, the Yadus are trying to protect Dharma also, and when Krishna makes a plan for elimination of Jarasandha, then the Yadus are very happy, and their sort of fighting spirit, Kshatriya spirit, is satisfied by that. Their Virya aspect is satisfied when Krishna agrees to eliminate Jarasandha. So, in this way, we get a nice solution to a problem. So, and the, as I said, the ultimate goal of Krishna is the satisfaction of the devotees. So, if the Yadus are satisfied and the Pandavas are satisfied, then that is the best result. So, this solution satisfies both parties. And therefore, a very, very good solution for everything. In the material world, we have, as I said, conflicts, etc. And but our precedence is a little different. Here is everyone wants to satisfy Krishna, whether it's the Yadus or Yudhisthira. Their only purpose is to please Krishna. But we have a little conflict due to that. So then we can say it's an easy solution because they're all dedicated to the Lord. In material world, a little different because everybody has different purposes. They're not trying to satisfy the Lord. They're trying to satisfy this person, that side, themselves, or whatever like that. So very difficult to solve the problems of the material world because they're so the interests are so diverse. How you can satisfy all these interests simultaneously? You cannot. So therefore, in the material world, material conflicts are, we can say, insolvable on the material level. We cannot solve them because everyone's got their personal interests. And if you satisfy one, you don't satisfy the other. But here, spiritual world, everyone's trying to satisfy Krishna. So it's all kind of unified together. And what looks like a problem gets resolved in this way. So therefore, the problem, how we resolve problems in the material world, everybody has to give up their self-interest. Then the problem is solved. If they don't, and they keep holding on to their interest, then you'll never solve the problem. So that is a very interesting fact that we have to admit in material world. And if we have conflicts in the material world, that we analyze things carefully, and then we tell people to give up their false ego and their self-interest, then we can solve the problem. But otherwise, we can't. The problems will go on forever. So in that way, Krishna consciousness is the solution. As Prabhupada said, we have United Nations, but we keep dividing the nations up further and further, having more conflicts and more nations. So that doesn't solve the problem, because everybody's got their self-interest and their false ego. But if everybody's interest is Krishna, then we can have the unity. Very logical type of analysis. So, yeah, a simple solution. Only difficulty is people don't want to give up their false ego. They don't want to surrender to Krishna. This is the only problem. So that's the big lack, is the lack of Krishna consciousness in the material world. People don't want to give up their self-interest and false ego and whatever. And instead, they want to hold on to that and they don't want to surrender. But if everyone just surrender, then we could have unity. So it may look a little bit utopian or imaginary, that it's some imaginary goal that cannot be achieved. But that also is the purpose of the material world, and Krishna's sending the Manus and their descendants into the world, and sending the devotees into the world, establishing scripture in the world, to make that attempt to get people off the bodily platform and understand there's unity on a higher level. And that means ultimately everyone has to accept the existence of the Supreme Lord and His authority and His laws and obey those laws. But more important than that, of course, is that's the Dharma aspect. The other aspect is the love aspect. Everyone should establish a loving relationship with the Lord, not just a formal follow the order relationship, but rather a loving relationship to the Lord. So that is the bhakti aspect of everything. That one should establish that. And that gives rise to bliss. So if we have bliss as the goal, then everyone can, everyone wants bliss, so then everyone can agree to that. So that is why in Kali Yuga, worship of Krishna is considered to be the only method. Let us not start this Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga, Stanga Yoga, just do Bhakti Yoga. And not just Bhakti Yoga, but Bhakti Yoga to Krishna, who's the highest form of bliss of all. So again, it's not irrational, it's quite a logical conclusion that we should go for the highest bliss. And so therefore worship Krishna. So that is the whole purpose of Bhagavatam, to have everyone worship Krishna. And in this way, if they're interested in happiness, then worship Krishna, get the highest bliss. That solves the problems. Everybody's interest is satisfying Krishna. Now, of course, if we want to get our bliss, we can say, well, that's self-interest. I get bliss. Yes, in one sense. Let's explain that the bliss is also the nature of the jiva. It's not that he has bliss automatically, because here in the material we're suffering in ignorance, but the jiva wants bliss, wants happiness. He gravitates towards that. Unfortunately, in the material world, it gets all tangled up with false ego and false identification, etc., etc. So we try to get our bliss through material things and ignorance. And that doesn't work out at all. Nevertheless, everyone established looking for some sort of happiness, whether it's a plant or an animal or a human being or a devata or Lord Brahma, some idea of happiness, happiness. And in the spiritual world, again, everyone, happiness is the goal, again, ananda. And that's the Krishna's main quality is ananda also. So that extends to all the jivas as well. Somehow they should be satisfied by that experience of bliss. So it is natural that the jiva should strive for that. It's just a matter of how to do it. So everyone in the material world is convinced, yes, we try to be happy by satisfying our material body, our senses, etc., and our extension of our senses, our family, and that's how we get our happiness. So that's the conception in the material world. And all individuals and all communities and all governments are working on that thing. Let us give people happiness by supplying something to their material body. And we can measure their happiness by the amount of things we give the people. The index of happiness is in terms of, I think, what is it? How annual income or something. But it doesn't work that way. Because then we find the poor countries are happier than the wealthy countries. So we get opposite results. But they measure the thing by economic growth or whatever. It doesn't work. So though it's an obvious fact, still we continue in that mode. Again, the question is, okay, how do we get the happiness? So the material thing doesn't really work. That thing. So the alternative is the spiritual one. We don't try to satisfy the body, try to satisfy the Atma, the soul, the Jiva. Yeah. And you cannot satisfy the Jiva with material things. We can only satisfy the Jiva with other living things. So the main living thing is Supreme Lord. He is the perfect, conscious, knowledgeable, blissful, full of all wonderful qualities person. He's the most perfect person. So therefore, the Supreme Lord is the natural object of love. So we get the bliss through, not through objects, but through person. And which person? Supreme Lord. Reflection of that is material world. We try objects, doesn't work. Then we try persons. So we try loving relationships. That also doesn't work out. Nevertheless, people keep trying. So at least, they're going in some sort of right direction, but they're looking at persons in terms of material bodies. So the real thing is to establish relationship between Jiva, not the body, but the Jiva and Supreme Lord. Then we have spiritual relationship. So that loving relationship is bhakti, which matures as prema. And then we get the happiness, the ananda. So if the jiva makes Krishna the center of his life, then that solves all the problems. Not only individually, because he gets his happiness, but if everybody else goes in that direction, then we have something in common. Common goal. And therefore, no conflict. As we see with the devotees here, the center is always Krishna, so ultimately no conflict. So similarly, in the material world, if we take up Krishna consciousness and aim for relationship with the Supreme Lord and satisfying Him, then our conflicts should resolve. If they don't, that means we're still fighting on this individual level, individual ego, etc. So there's something wrong. We're not going in the right direction. So if we have a prominence of dedication to Krishna, all the other things become secondary, and therefore we can solve the conflicts and the problems that arise between us by that strength of attraction to Krishna. So that is the solution to the conflict of the material world. So Krishna creates the material world, and he puts the Manus and their descendants there to establish Dharma and Bhakti. He puts the devotees there as well, like Narada Muni and others. So on different levels, the Lord is trying to bring the Jivas away from their self-interest towards Supreme Lord. So the Dharma aspect of establishing Varnashram is the preliminary aspect to at least get the Jiva a little bit away from his ego and his material identification. Not radically, but let's say gradually, by establishing rules at least to control the senses. So once the senses are controlled, then we can think a little clearer. And we develop less self-interest, which means ultimately we gravitate towards sattva-gun. And as sattva-gun, as far as material consciousness is concerned, we have less self-interest. And then we begin to appreciate also soul, atma. So we can understand that we're not the body in sattva-gun. So that's a good realization to have, and consequently, less attached to material world. So that's the purpose of the whole Varnashram system, to raise the jiva up over many births to Sattva-guna birth. Then he can start thinking about Atma and body and difference, etc. From that he can get through Supreme Lord. But it's indirect. It only goes that far. So then the continuation is to perform bhakti. Or, of course, if we have a dive of Varnashram where we have bhakti and built into it, then a process is quite natural that as one advances towards sattva, then one would take up more enthusiastically the process of bhakti. Nevertheless, we get a distinction between the processes, and we have different names, karma yoga, jnana yoga, stanga yoga, and we have bhakti yoga, because of the prominence of interest. So when the interest is mainly to establish a relationship with the Lord, then we call that bhakti. And we perform activities which directly will establish that relationship. We engage our senses and our mind in such a way that that relationship becomes stronger. So that's what we call bhakti yoga. So, of the different processes, though the other processes are there, Bhagavatam again condemns everything else, ultimately. As we see many times in the different stories, how attachment to sacrifices and karma kanda, etc., gets condemned, and even liberation gets condemned. Getting out of the material world through jnana and yoga ultimately gets condemned. And only thing left is bhakti. So therefore, advice in Kali Yuga is just concentrate on the process of bhakti. That's the main thing we should concentrate on. Other things we can do to support the bhakti. But the main thing is do the bhakti. And of course, within bhakti itself, then we have different processes, and then chanting the holy name is the highest process again. So we get a whole series of arrangements made by the Supreme Lord to help us establish that relationship with the Supreme Lord. And that's the solution to all the problems in the material world. Otherwise, if we don't do that, then everybody's left with their own self-interest, and we never solve the problems. Therefore, there will always be conflict. And instead of getting happiness, we get suffering. So this is the position in the material world. So the only solution is to establish this relationship with Krishna. Govinda.
You said so many wonderful things, but there's two things I wonder if you could maybe develop a little more, and I'm thinking with reference to the works of Rupa Goswami. So you made the point over and over again that if we all have Krishna's interests at the center, that we can resolve our conflicts. At the same time, Rupa Goswami writes, and you told him money about, you know, this intense feelings of condemnation practically between different groups that have different ways of wanting to satisfy Krishna.
Yeah.
So we do see times that those groups are together happily, but we also hear that. I was wondering if you could speak
about
that.
Yeah, okay. Spiritual conflict.
Yes, spiritual conflict. I'm asking two questions. So the other thing is also in the same book, Rupa Goswami talks about samartha, love. Because you talked about that we're bliss-seeking, and in one sense you could say that all bliss-seeking is self-interest, but Rupa Goswami talks about a bliss-seeking that is not at all self-interest.
Yeah, yeah.
The samartha, where your happiness is totally one with the happiness of the Lord. If
yeah.
you're willing to speak about both of those things, mm-hmm. I would be
yeah.
very grateful.
Yeah. So, yes, there's conflict in the spiritual world. Because of that, then people will say, we don't want to go there. This is like the material world, having all these problems up there as well. But as Rupa Goswami explains, that all of these things are actually the conflict and the matsarya, the envy and whatever, and the criticism and whatever that they do to each other is an aspect, a secondary aspect, which you can say is the vyabhichari aspect of their religion.